low 40s over eastern Wisconsin to the 60s across Missouri. Low temperatures overnight will range from the upper 20s in Iowa to the low 40s in western Kentucky and southern Illinois. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, mostly sunny with a high of 52. The wind from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear. The low 38, the wind will be out of the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 58. The wind from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour early. Tomorrow afternoon will be breezy with the wind out of the south at 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, warmer and breezy. The low, 50. The wind from the south at 20 to 25 miles per hour. Sunday, mostly cloudy and windy with a chance of showers. Look for a high in the low 60s. The wind will be out of the southwest at 25 to 30 miles per hour with gusts to 40 miles per hour. Monday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and a high around 60. At noon central time, temperatures ranged from 40 in northern locations to the low 50s in the south. Northern locations reported cloudy skies. In the south, sunshine was reported, also in central locations. Rockford reported 40 degrees, as did O'Hare Airport. Bloomington, mostly sunny and 46. Mattoon, mostly sunny and 46. And at Carbondale, it was sunny, the temperature 53. 40 degrees at South Bend, 42 at Lafayette. In Indianapolis, it was 43, in Terre Haute, 46. Northern locations, again, reporting cloudy skies. In Terre Haute, it was sunny. Willard Airport reported a mostly sunny sky at the top of the hour, the temperature 46. The relative humidity 51%, the dew point 29, the wind out of the south at 18, and the barometric pressure 29.99 and falling. And at 12:39, 45 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. This week, thousands of women gathered in Portland, Oregon for the Grace Hopper Celebration, the world's largest technical conference for women in computing. High-tech companies say design teams with men and women often create better products. High-tech companies are recruiting and hiring, but as NPR's Wendy Kaufman reports, there aren't nearly enough women to meet the demand.
Katie Schmaltz-Reed, a graduate student at Stanford, recalls one of her very first classes at the university, Computer Science 106A.
That was definitely a very good introduction into women in tech. There weren't very many women in the class. I very distinctly remember being the only girl in my section.
It's no secret that beginning in middle school, young women often lose interest in science and math. So it's not surprising that relatively few women sign up for computer courses in college. And when they do, they're often at a huge disadvantage.
I remember the guy on the first day sitting next to me, he was telling me how he had coded up a search engine. And I'm sitting there like, are you kidding me? I've never coded anything. This is like day one introduction.
Katie Schmaltz-Reed was able to catch up, but says by the second semester, fewer than half the original women were still in the course. Nationwide, only about 20% of the bachelor's degrees in computer science go to women. And Mark Bregman, the former chief technology officer at Symantec, says for the industry, it's not nearly enough.
One of the things that's a barrier to our ability to grow is our ability to hire the best talent. If we could get more women to go into computer science, we would have more talent to hire from.
Bregman, who's now a senior executive at a company called Neustar, says there's an acute shortage of computing talent. He not only worries about the small number of women coming in the door, but also about the industry's inability to retain them. They leave their technical jobs far more often than men. Bregman cites empirical and anecdotal evidence that teams with men and women are often more productive and build stuff that's more interesting. Take Symantec's effort to develop software to limit what kids could see and do on the internet.
The initial engineering approach was we will just block the bad stuff. And through some of the internal discussion, it became clear that, well, that's not really going to work because the kids are going to get around it. And so rather than do that, why not create a product which enhances the dialogue between the parents and the children about what is safe behavior on the internet. That's very different than the hard and fast, engineering-driven, I'll use the term male, approach, which just says no, yes or no.
In an effort to bring in more women, Bregman began requiring hiring managers to interview women for engineering jobs, even if on paper they weren't as strong as the male candidates. And once in the door, the women often demonstrated their worth and got the jobs. Other companies have their own initiatives. Here at Facebook, sun-drenched offices in Silicon Valley, you'll find nursing rooms and premium parking slots for pregnant women. But Jocelyn Goldfein, a director of engineering, says there are far more substantial efforts to hire and retain women.
One of the things Facebook has that I love, I arrived here too late to take advantage of it, is the parental leave. Facebook offers 4 months of paid parental leave, not just to women, but also to men. And because the men are taking it, it's not this abnormal thing that only affects the one person in the team who's a woman.
Over time, that should help women whose careers have often been derailed when they took time off to have kids. But there's something quietly insidious happening in many high-tech companies. Women engineers, more often than men, end up in testing or project management. Those positions usually pay less and carry less status, so moving up the career ladder becomes more difficult. And when women aren't promoted, they are more likely to leave. Wendy Kaufman, NPR News.
Even before he was born, the campus minister at Wesley United Methodist Church in Urbana, Rob Kirby, has had a connection to Thailand. His parents lived there for some time. He loves Thai cuisine, and Kirby's three adopted children are from Thailand. The link grew stronger last year as Rob and his wife, Darcy, spent some time working in the country and gaining a new appreciation for its culture. Rob Kirby spoke about the experience with Illinois Public Media's Jeff Bossert.
We had Thai artifacts around the household with nice little stories about how such and such was acquired in the noodle shops on the street and just the ins and outs of everyday life back in the early 70s. So that creates an image in your head, but so often when you actually go and visit someplace, it doesn't fit that image. In the intervening 35 years, 40 years, there were a lot of changes, I suspect.
Yeah, what kind of things maybe are we not aware of? The first thing that I have to admit, first thing that people tell me when I said I was going to talk to someone who spent time in Thailand is there's a lot of flooding issues right now. Were you at all in those territories that would later experience so much of this?
Certainly. We were in a province called Nonthaburi, which is one province upriver of Bangkok on the Chao Phraya River. And we're in a village there called Pakret. But when they call it a village, it's more of a township. It's still a suburb of Bangkok. There's a lot of people commuting in and out of the city. And it's actually kind of where the waters have been dammed up the last few weeks as they've tried to keep the waters from flooding into Bangkok. They've created all of these dikes and other ways to hold the water back, but all it does is just builds up on the other side of those dikes.
We'll talk about your jobs. I mean, she found something, and then how are you able to come across what you did during the past year?
Certainly. Our trip over there was contingent upon her working and finding some way to make money. And even though I have a master's degree in divinity, it doesn't do me a lot of good in Thailand, where less than 1% of the population is Christian. But my wife has a teaching degree, and she was able to get a placement at an English-speaking international school. New one there in Nonthaburi. It was their first semester, so she was one of their first round of teachers that they brought in. So she found that position, and we found a place to live not too far from there. And then I began to look for places I could serve and quite literally stumbled across this place called CCD, Christian Care Foundation for Children with Disabilities. They had an incredible vision for ways that they could enrich the lives of some of the orphans there. The way the Thailand orphanage system works, just about any orphan who has any form of disability gets shipped to Pakret. That's the township we were in. And so there's 8 big, large government orphanages there, each with between 500 and 800 children each. So quite literally, there were thousands of disabled orphans there in that township where we were. And the government does an okay job of housing and feeding the children, but there's not much enrichment. There's not much therapy that they're able to provide. Their resources are stretched thin, And unfortunately, many of the kids kind of languish there in the orphanages. So the organization I was working with goes into those government orphanages. They provide daycare centers with musical therapists, with physical therapists. And I was working with those. I ended up serving as a chaplain or a counselor for some of those mostly young adults who are going into that orphanage setting.
So what were you able to bring back, not just for the ministry, but any lessons you might be able to teach a neighbor or friend about the culture there and large differences in life?
Certainly. We have made huge strides with persons with disabilities in this country, where more often than not, they get mainstreamed somehow. They are mixed in with all the other kids in schools and stuff like that whenever possible. And my own children, when they're around children with disability, they often don't see the disability. They see the person first, and that's what it's all about. Thailand's just making that change. They're just starting to get to the place where they're finding ways to, instead of kind of secluding persons with special needs, kind of integrating them into society. And there's radical change that happens then. Suddenly, parents no longer feel like they need to kind of hide their children from their society. Suddenly, they begin to see other children achieving more than they thought they might have been able to see out of their own children, and it gets very synergistic. So as I come back with just a deep passion for how do we make sure that we embrace people with everything that they've been given, and instead of looking at a few areas where they might be different, look at what can be achieved in their lives.
Anything else you'd like to touch on that we haven't covered about Thai culture or things that we did really hope that we would better expose, and or maybe if people research the Thai Student Association, they can learn more about it?
Sure. Thailand is known as a land of smiles, and it quite literally is. Some of that is culturally. They're taught that they aren't supposed to show displeasure. They aren't supposed to do anything that might make someone lose face. So a reaction to just about anything is to smile. So if they're embarrassed, they'll smile. If they're struggling, they will smile. As we're watching images of the flood sweeping through Bangkok, you'll see a lot of smiles. You'll see them making fun of it. There's a Thai word for it, sanuk, which is a kind of a joie de vivre. It's a lightness of life. So you'll see lots of smiles, but they're really struggling right now. And the devastation that the flood is doing and will continue to do is immense.
It sounds like a country that really learns to appreciate what little they have.
Absolutely. They are a people that find the silver lining whenever possible, and they extend it to visitors in their midst.
Wesley United Methodist Campus Minister Rob Kirby, he spoke with Jeff Bossert. Yesterday marked Thailand's annual celebration of water and light, but Kirby says many of the celebrations, including those through the University of Illinois' Thai Student Association, have been